Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up.
How many remember the movie The Fugitive where the wrong guy was getting away? Finally had to point him out. You're the man. You're the guilty one. They were going after the wrong guy. People get accused and even convicted and crucified that are innocent from time to time, don't they? You know, like Jesus and all the disciples arrested. Okay. Well, the fact that Cindy, my ex-wife, went straight to the atheist channel with her story ought to say something to somebody. So sure enough, yesterday, the Conecuh County Court over here ruled Hovind's guilty and has to serve 30 days in jail.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. To find more information about the Preacher Boys podcast, visit PreacherBoysDoc.com or connect on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
If you grew up in fundamentalist circles, you're likely familiar with Kent Hovind, the creation evangelist, also known as Dr. Dino, and the owner of Dinosaur Adventureland. I know I grew up watching so many of his tapes and am very familiar with the man himself. You're probably also familiar with the fact that he spent time in prison for tax fraud. You probably didn't know that in 2021, he was sentenced for domestic abuse and is currently in the appeals process right now. I sat down with Cindy Lincoln, Ken Hovind's third wife, and she shares a little bit about the darker side of Dinosaur Adventureland, her relationship with Ken Hovind, and goes deeper into her side of the story regarding the domestic abuse case. This episode is really fascinating, and I had a great conversation with Cindy. If you're like me and you're familiar with Kent Hovind, there is much of this that won't come as a shock, and some that probably will startle you when you realize just how deep it allegedly goes.
So God made the animals, then he made man, then he made the garden, then he made the animals, one more of each animal again for Adam to name them and select a wife. And up out of the ground came the elephant. He said, "The elephant, no, thank you, Lord. Giraffe, no, hamster, no, thank you, Lord." One by one, God made one of each, and he named them and rejected them as a wife. And God said, "Go to sleep, son. I got a surprise for you when you wake up." And so he put Adam to sleep, took one small spare part, made the world's first loudspeaker. I mean, made the first.
First and foremost, I mean, Kent Hovind is a very big name in what could be considered, I guess, a small world in the world of, you know, Christian fundamentalism. Like, I know I was brought up watching tons of his content and his DVDs and presentations, and he was a really popular name. What was kind of your introduction to him just as the person Kent Hovind? Like, were you familiar with him for a long time? Were you kind of raised in that circle, or was it someone you discovered like much later on?
I was saved in Nebraska in, I think it was evangelical free denomination. Mm. And I very shortly moved to California where I was in a non-denominational. And I was early on in the faith that mainline denominations were dead and to just go non-denominational. And so, and I was also familiar with the Baptists in that they were the kind where you polish your shoes, you put on a lapel pin, and you only present your Sunday best. Mm-hmm. Now, even though I was saved in Nebraska, I was born and raised in California. I am a hippie at heart. And so that was my polar opposite. Mm. And even in California, the church that I was going to, there were a lot of ex-hippies, and we went in jeans. Mm. And we actually talked about sin. We were accountable. It wasn't like, well, no, I would never do anything like that, you know, and you only show your Sunday best. No. I was so pleased to be in a church where you could actually be accountable to each other. You could talk about your struggles. It was beautiful. And so when I came to Alabama to be in this ministry, it was not because I was an IFB. I've never been an IFB, and I never wanted to be an IFB. And I thought that as a Christian, we share the same, you know, how you get saved.
Yeah.
What is the main teaching of the Bible? So I didn't think the denomination meant that much. If I had known how... So Kent Hovind pretends to be a good Christian. Mm-hmm. You don't find out until you cross him what an IFB really is.
No.
So anyway, in 1984, I was saved. In 1989, I ran across Henry Morris and the Institute for Creation Research.
Yeah.
Dwayne Gish. That whole situation, which is where Kent gets all his material.
Yeah.
And then in 2016, well, in 2012, my son died. Hmm. And his father was on a restraining order. And so I mourned for a year, and then I decided, okay, Cindy, you are now free. You don't have any kids. You don't have a husband. You can be a missionary. I had wanted to be a missionary for 30 years. So I started looking into teaching English in China, working at orphanages in Haiti or Africa. I was too chicken for all that, especially alone, especially grieving. I knew I needed fellowship. And when I ran into Kent Hovind on the internet, it was like the perfect opportunity because you're living in a community of like-minded Christians.
Yeah.
Part of my mourning and therapy was landscaping. He was asking for a landscaper. I'm like, yay.
So was it a job posting that you saw originally from him?
Yeah. Ever since I had been in San Diego with the Institute for Creation Research 20 years before that, that message was in my heart. Mm-hmm. I wanted to share the creation message, but in California, nobody wants to hear it.
Yeah.
So I felt like the Dead Sea. I had all this input and nowhere to go with it. No one wanted to hear it. And so I went and visited Dinosaur Adventureland, fell in love with the fellowship, fell in love with the property, and enjoyed just being a landscaper, the earth, the flowers, the digging, the physical labor. It was therapeutic for me. And so I went home, sold everything, and moved there. That was going to be my new life for the rest of my life, is what I thought. Long story short, real short, there's a lot in between hand, but I ended up falling in love with Kent Hovind. I thought that, you know, how he doesn't charge admission, how he's 100% always preaching. He puts all his money into this ministry. Mm-hmm. When I went from California to Alabama, I saw two other dinosaur parks, but they're teaching evolution. So I'm like, we really need a creation dinosaur Adventureland. And just, it became in my heart too. And shortly after I married Kent, it became evident that he had a real, real dark underbelly.
Yeah.
There was a situation on campus where some people were high and Kent called a drug test. You know, he leads a lot of people to the Lord and they were new converts. Kent's tech man, Steve, was bringing to his house and pulling them off the bandwagon.
Yeah.
Getting them high. So I want to help these new converts. I want to help them with what they came there for, to turn over a new leaf in life. And I was on the wrong end of the argument. Kent Hovind wanted to cover for this drug. Pushing. And I'm like, What?
No.
And then later on, turns out this same guy gets busted. And when he's in jail, Kent sends 13 Dinosaur Adventureland volunteers to his house to collect the evidence before the police can get it. He finds sadomasochistic pornography on endless loop on two ministry computers in Steve's home. And essentially cameras, sex props. This man is manufacturing porn on creation science evangelism equipment.
Yeah.
And again, Kent wants to hide it.
Before moving further on that, because I believe I read an interview with Kent's second wife, where she mentioned some of these issues with like him bringing in, unless I'm misremembering the article, and it was somebody else, but I believe it was the second wife that mentioned that he would bring in a host of characters into the organization. Some that were on drugs were mentioned specifically, some that were, you know, and I think under the idea of restoration, which is a word that gets thrown around a lot, but under the idea of helping them get on their feet, but there's a variety of these people. And the fear there was that, you know, he was getting into situations where he was going to get into trouble again, you know, like he had, you know, originally, and get into some kind of legal situation because of the types of people he's bringing around. Yeah. So this is something that has been echoed over a couple different testimonies now. You know,
I have 28 stinking people interviewed on my channel.
Right. So
no idea how he can possibly still be in business.
So up to this point, like when you first, you know, started falling for Kent, like, were you aware of any of these stories, like the tax evasion? I mean, was obviously a large one, but I mean, were you aware of any of the passings, or was that something you kind of also at the time chalked up to like, well, they're probably just upset, or they're probably, this can't be true. Like, did you find yourself kind of, because I know for myself, like, you know, it's easy when you're in it to go like, that can't be right. Like, this is such a, he's the Mr. Rogers of fundamentalism. Like, this can't be possibly accurate, you know?
Okay. The tax evasion issue. I did do some homework on that. And I watched Kent Hovind is Innocent.com by Brady Byram. And I found it compelling.
Yeah.
I thought he's being persecuted for the faith.
Which is the version most, I mean, it kind of made him a hero for a lot of people who, you know, tend to be more libertarian leaning. Even, I mean, the idea of someone getting put in prison for a tax issue is lionizes him more than it does, you know, villainize him. Bingo. In a lot of eyes. Yeah.
Bingo. Now, as far as Steve and the drug issue, Mary and I witnessed a lot of that together, and Steve actually got fired and sent off campus. So when I married Kent, Steve was gone. I thought, oh, praise God. But, and Mary's issues with how the 501c3 was being run, I didn't know as much about the 501c3 as she did, because she's got one in her family. Her daughter has one.
Sure.
And, but I did leave with Mary, and I came just to visit friends, and those friends told me, oh, well, the IRS already came. The FBI already came. And Mary was exaggerating. They didn't do anything. And Cindy, you're free to come back. And I think I probably, I know for sure that I was in communication with Mary. And I said, honey, I think this man's legit. I think you need to come home. That was before I fell in love with him. And she said, no, uh-uh, you don't understand. I cannot come home. I'm not risking my freedom. And so when I was first saved, I didn't believe in remarriage at all. I thought if you're going to get divorced, you stay single and seek to be reconciled for the rest of your life. And then after like 7 years, I'm like,
maybe not.
Maybe not my whole life. I mean, yeah. I did remain single for 7 years. So I changed my position on remarriage. So in my book, he was free to remarry.
Right. I was curious about that too, because that's another start. I mean, especially now you look at four wives and three in a relatively short time. And that's a big no-no in, you know, the world that I grew up in. So I was surprised by that as well. I was curious what the thought process was. But like I said, he's really a denomination to himself at this point. So like, he seems to be kind of creating his own version of theology on that front. But I was curious about the remarriage side. Yeah.
It is extremely important in God's economy, if possible, be married. Find one you're compatible with and marry him. It's not good for the man to be alone. So here we got a conflict. What if a person gets a divorce? Now what? What if they're the innocent party in the divorce? Now what? Sometimes there are what appear to be contradictory commands, and you have to say, okay, which do I do? Okay, your foot is stuck in the car. The car's on fire. You cut the foot off to save the life? Yeah. Doctors, that's just standard, you know, medical practice. If you have to lose the limb to save the life, you lose the limb. Yeah, but it's not good to cut somebody's foot off. Yeah, it's worse to burn up in the car.
And later, Mary told me, I mean, she didn't tell me at the time, but later she told me that she was waiting for him to repent and come on a white stallion and say, Mary, I can't live without you. And after that, I started crying and I just said, I'm so sorry. I should. But he was already dating somebody else, and she didn't even ever step foot on the campus. She was not related to the ministry. And anyway, I knew he wasn't going to stay single. I told him, I said, you need to stay single or seek to be reconciled. And he said, I'm not going to. And she had told me straight up, she wasn't coming back. So anyway, it was probably a huge mistake. But at the time I thought, you know, we both have the same ministry in our heart. I loved living there. You know, it's really strange how you can think that God is leading you and you end up in retrospect, wow, it sure felt like God, but it sure wasn't. Mm. Either that or God wanted me there to do the exposing right now.
Yeah. So this was 2018, and in the two of you cut ties in 2020. How quickly did it go? Oh, is it 21?
Less than a year.
Okay.
So shortly after we got married, Steve returned. Mm-hmm. Everybody on campus was like, oh no. It was January of 2019 that Kent said, oh, he's reformed. He loves the Lord. And of course, I believe my husband. I didn't believe my husband. I didn't believe Steve would reform. But that's another tricky thing about Christianity, because the Lord does cause people to be completely changed.
Yeah.
And basically, I went along with my husband because of submission, you know. And I don't know.
Well, he's your spiritual leader and, you know, and family leader, I guess is fair to say. Was he... So he's listed as a pastor and evangelist on his site. As far as, like, you know, church, you weren't attending a church. I mean, was it just that world? Like, was it just Dinosaur Adventure Land? He was kind of the pastoral role. Were the two of you attending somewhere?
One of the sick parts, okay? Like I said, when I was saved in 84, I was very involved with church for those. Mm-hmm. And when I moved there, I wanted to keep going to church. That's one of the things I do.
Yeah.
And I go to night Bible studies and I get to know people and I have accountability groups. I have fellowship. And when Mary was there, we all went to Eastwood Baptist Church, and it was a precious church. I really liked it. And then for some reason, Kent stopped taking everybody to church on Sunday, and he decided he was going to be a church. And there was some tax benefit to becoming a church. And so he wanted to become a church. And so then it's no longer a church. Basically, it's only people who go to Dinosaur Adventureland and Kent. And most of us didn't feel satisfied with that, because basically he does a lot of self promo. We listen to him on YouTube every night of the week. And a lot of times it's about creation evolution instead of just Bible. And anyway, that was a sick part of it. We should have kept going to a church. When we ended up, when the drug bust happened and Kent turned on me, we went to Eastwood Baptist Church for counseling. Mm. But the guy fired us very quickly and basically said, Cindy, he's not going to allow you to have a valid point. You need to either love it or leave it, is pretty much what I was told.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, this is not my first rodeo. I did not want another divorce. I was going to do anything I could to stay in that marriage. But unfortunately, Kent had other plans. And he knew that I was not going to join him in his cover-ups. And so he was subversively trying to turn the flame up on me so that I would leave.
The drug bust is the first real fracture point. Yeah. And then from that point on, like you mentioned turning up the flame, like what was kind of the next series of events? Was it just one thing after another? Was it a little bit of a lull before the next event, you know, like what were kind of the next stakes that started driving into that, you know, wedge that was there?
I do think that there was like abuse lull. Mm-hmm. Well, one of them was shortly after the drug bust. Steve wrote me this abusive letter. He called me a Jezebel, accused me of hitting on him, accused me of sleeping around before Kent, accused me of several other things. And I brought the letter to Kent, and I'm like, did you see this? Are you going to allow your tech guy, your number one employee, to talk to your wife like this?
Yeah.
Basically, he saw no problem with it. This is another slippery thing about Kent. He uses other people to do his dirty work.
Hmm.
So then after the Jezebel letter, he had Brady Byram write me a page, really abusive letter. That's on my channel. I narrated it. He had Ernie Land approach me and say I was a bipolar idiot. Hmm. You know, when Kent, that drug bust, where he called me Cora, that I he ended that meeting in prayer. Mm-hmm. And hypocrisy was just way more than I could cope with. And I did start crying really loudly, and I ran all the way home crying. Mm-hmm. And they took that crying to mean that I was emotionally unstable and bipolar. And
yeah,
he basically went with the she's crazy thing and just started to perpetuate that.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched a video with him today where he used that same language about bipolar and crazy and yeah, all those sorts of accusations. Yeah.
And he says the same thing about other people who go against him.
Yeah.
That Mark Stoney is also PTSD from the military, and he's crazy, and we had to kick him off because he was so crazy, which is just out and out lie. I mean, the man is a real severe storyteller. So ultimately, at one point, Steve threatened me with a gun in his pocket, and then he vandalized my property to the tune of about $10,000, and Kent wouldn't do anything about either one of them. And in fact, not only would he not chastise him or defend his wife, but rather he promoted him to the board.
And threatening you in regards to what specifically? What were his, was he requesting something or demanding of something, or just what was the, what was his goal?
In January of 2019, when he came back and Kent said he was loved the Lord, etc., I had sold my California property, and it was other Alabama properties to replace that rental income. And I allowed Steve to be one of my renters.
Okay.
And he just digressed over the year. He played games with rent. He wouldn't allow me to have access to my home. When repairs were needed, just long story. And so I gave him a 30-day notice. And at the end of the 30 days, I was doing a video chat with a prospective tenant, and I was not on the property because I knew Steve was hostile. I was in the road. I said, here's the field. Here's the well house. Here's the brand new. And Steve saw me with a video, and he came barreling out of the house yelling, you effing this, you're spying on me, or something like that. And I said, no, Steve, I'm doing a video chat with a prospective tenant who wants to move in.
Yeah.
You are not blah, blah, blah. And he went right back into the house and came out of the house about a minute later with his right hand on his right pocket. And I knew exactly what was going on. And I didn't see the gun, but there's another video on my channel that has five other people saying the same thing, that he threatened them the same way with his right hand in his right pocket. He doesn't wear a holster. His pants are always falling down because he's got a gun in there. And he's a threatening thug.
Yeah.
Perfect for Kent's use. So when Kent promoted him to the board after that, I knew that, well, and not only that, but he invited Steve to live in our house. Okay. And me lived in a 2-bedroom house. Like 800 square feet.
Yeah.
There's this man who's called me a Jezebel, falsely accused me, threatened me, vandalized my house, stole my washer and dryer. Kent's inviting him to live with us because I was evil to evict him.
Yeah.
And so basically the flame just got hot enough when I realized this is not a marriage. This is not a flipping marriage.
Yeah.
I'm in enemy territory. I gotta get out of here. And so when he moved out, I moved in.
So during this time, did you have any contacts or people that you were able to talk to through this? Or was it kind of you're in no man's land pretty much, you know, where it's like, who do I chat with about this? Because I know at this point you've had conversations with people, you know, from the past and have had several dialogues. You mentioned 20 plus conversations with different individuals. At the at this point, were you having these conversations? Were you aware of how bad it was, or was it just the immediate, you know, you kind of retreat back to yourself and this is happening around you?
I did have a lot of cognitive dissonance, like you were saying, where it's like, oh no, this can't be true. But the higher the flame got, the more it was like, no, this is what's going on. And yeah. I went to the people who lived on campus. Well, the Bible says, Matthew 18, if someone offends you, go to them. Yeah. I went to my husband. I went to him lovingly in the beginning, and then a little more aggressively, and then angrily. And then if he will not hear you, then you go, then you bring other witnesses with you and you approach him again. So I approached him with several people on campus. Kent still wouldn't listen. And I broadened the circle and I went outside people who lived there to other Christians that I knew were reputable that knew him, basically begging anybody, can you please talk some sense into this man?
Yeah.
And there's another video on my channel where Eric Hovind did the same exact thing. There's a list of all the names that Eric Hovind tried to sic on his father. There's pastors, family members, Kent's brother. Please, will you talk some sense into Kent? I mean, I didn't know this at the time. I've done a lot of research afterwards to discover. I mean, one of the first things I did when I left was call Joe Hovind. I said,
yeah.
Was he always like this, or did jail change him? Or basically to get somebody who would understand. And I was shocked to find out she was not surprised about anything I told her. And no, he didn't change in jail. He's always been like that. And Joe Hovind's silence is one of the reasons why I'm not going to be silent. Because her silence basically cost Mary and I a lot.
Yeah.
If she would have spoken out and revealed the true Kent Hovind, a lot of people would have been saved. There's a lot of people who have lost financially as well as spiritually and emotionally, seeing his abusive behaviors and thinking that's what Jesus is like, and I don't want nothing to do with Jesus if that's what it's like. So that's another reason why I'm here, because I don't want the church to think that this is what Christianity is supposed to look like. I don't want the church to think this is what Jesus looks like. Kent Hovind does not represent Jesus. He represents the Pharisees that Jesus turned the tables on and made the cord, the whip with the cords, turning the Father's house into a den of thieves.
Hey, everybody, we're going to get back to the show in just a minute. But before our brief intermission, I'd like to introduce a thought-provoking new podcast called Psychotherapy. That's two words if you're going to go search for it right now. This show sheds light on the very real issue of abusive therapists and pastoral counselors. In every helping profession, including therapy, there's a vulnerability to exploitation. And Psychotherapy delves deep into the red flags, risks, and real-life stories of those affected by unethical practices. Tune in to Psychotherapy with Leah Denton on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your shows.
I'm Leah Denton, and this is Psychotherapy, a show dedicated to providing survivors of therapy harm a platform to share their stories and to offer language for those of us trying to make sense of our own experiences with the psycho in the therapist chair.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious on that front, because this is one thing. So, you know, you've obviously been on a lot of channels and talked about the story, and you know, unfortunately, when it comes to these conversations, I feel like a lot of Christian influencers, churches, there's this idea that by talking about exposing abuses and, you know, uncovering things that have been covered up, that it's an attack on the church as a whole. I think that's and you've gotten your fair share of feedback like that. You know, in one of the videos I watched where Kent was talking about this, you know, he mentioned, you know, he used that against you, that you ran to these atheist channels and his words.
Harming
you
the cause of Christ.
Right, right. So I am curious because these same atheist channels, you know, there are channels that do drink this stuff up because it does look like, hey, you know, Kent is this and he's a huckster and he's pushing, you know, he's cashing in on this creation, you know, all these sorts of conversations happen. And I'm curious from your perspective, like, what do you think Kent's motivations are? Because is it just this is his niche where he can have a little bit of control over his slice of the world? Is it a financial thing? Like, what do you think is motivating or keeping him focused on this? Because he's just an interesting figure, for lack of a better term.
That's one of the reasons it took me so long, because I could not wrap my head around the fact that this guy could be so good at the creation science stuff. And I've since heard he's not as good as I thought. There's some isms of his science, and yet be a huckster. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to be a con man to hide a money grab, a drug cover up, a porn production, you wouldn't think of creation science.
Yeah. There's plenty of other career paths where you could get involved in that. Yeah.
But so I can't figure that out either. I cannot figure that out either. And if you're going to be a con covering for these crimes, you're probably not going to be very good at the science part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing doesn't make sense to me. He is a narcissist. So part of it is just pure power and control and image. He wants to be famous. He wants to be well loved or not loved. He doesn't have any stitch of love in him. He wants to be admired or even worshipped. I don't know about worshipped, but
do you think he started with that in mind, or do you think it's something like, as you've, I mean, you've talked to Joe and Mary, I mean, and it's always hard, right? It's because you're assuming someone's motivations or someone's intent in the beginning. It's just an interesting lane, but I mean, there's no, I'm not shocked by much anymore, because I mean, there's so many people that they pastor a church of 20 people and they have the same personality, you know, and you wonder, how do you feel so entitled with such a small sphere, you know? And he does. He has no shortage of people that admire him within this world. So I was curious what his kind of driver was at this point, or what his motivator was.
And if you listen to his story about how it started, it does actually make sense. So he took the Henry Morris stuff. He wrote a letter to the editor in a newspaper to rebut a newspaper article that said that dinosaur bones had been found and they were millions of years old. And basically he was approached by university to do a discussion on that for the university students. And then that led to many more people wanting it. So in a sense, it was basically a gold mine laid at his lap.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it wasn't intentionally devised. He just lacked the moral fiber to prevent a legitimate ministry from becoming a criminal organization.
Yeah. And again, this is a story. I was reading an article today and it was talking about this whole thing is convoluted because there's so many layers to everything, you know, and there's different perspectives. There's so many different pieces of this. So on the one side, you have the drug bust, the types of employees that are being hired. With your story specifically, you have two branches that I see. So you have this financial side, which we can talk about, and then you have this kind of domestic abusive environment, you know, that's being talked about, which he was sentenced. So that's something, you know, people love to always respond to my videos. Well, innocent until proven guilty in court of law. And, you know, which I say at the beginning of every episode. So for clarity, he was sentenced for domestic abuse. It's going through the appeals process right now. Before we talk about that, let's talk a little bit about the financial side of this and how did that kind of start? Was that something that started after becoming married? Was it something that had started beforehand? Like, what was the trajectory of that? Because I've read about it a lot and I'm, you know, I was trying to put the pieces together as far as like that timeline goes.
When I came from California, I rented out my home and I got $1,000 a month in rent check. And since I didn't have to pay rent, because when you work for Kent, you trade room and board for 40 hours a week. And so I had extra and I did put it into the landscape just a little bit. But after I was there for a while and I decided to sell my California home because I was tired of paying California property taxes. And I knew that if I bought, if I replaced that $2,000 per month in Alabama, I could probably get rental properties and have left over. Because at this time I had been married. I was madly in love. I felt like this was going to be where I was going to live forever. I was serving the Lord. I was living my dream. And I, if I could sell my Cali home and get enough profit that I could do something substantial at Dinosaur Adventureland and still maintain my $2,000 per month, that was my goal. And after I bought my first rental property, I was only making $700 a month off of it. This is Alabama. You don't get as much. And I was looking to buying another rental property so that I could again replace my $2,000. Well, I had the idea and I came to Kent and I said, honey, I think I have a great idea. What if instead of buying another house, I don't really need a house, I just need another rent check.
Yeah.
I put it into Dinosaur Adventureland and you guys give me a rent check every month. So he said, let me talk to Ernie. So Ernie wrote up this contract and Ernie said, well, we're not registered with the Security Exchange Commission. We can't do an annuity, but I can call it spousal support. And at the time I thought it was just, you know, okay, I'm his spouse. So they can, the ministry can call it a spousal support check and it'll be legit. And, but the contract said 20 years that they were going to pay me $1,300 a month for 20 years. And so I thought I had a legally binding contract. And I said to him, I want you to print it, notarize, and give me a paper copy, not just this email version. And COVID hit, and he claimed that he wasn't able to get it notarized. And then I started smelling a fish, and I had Kent sign a different document where I wrote it out by hand that this is not just in exchange for work or being a spouse. This is in exchange for the money that I'm giving.
Yeah. Which was $133,000.
At that time, I gave them $133,000 more than I had already given them.
Gotcha.
I'd already given them $90,000. When I sold my house, I tithed 10% straight off the top and I bought some other things. I bought a greenhouse, a geodesic dome greenhouse, and a bunch of plants. I wanted it. I wanted to make a Garden of Eden.
You really are a hippie at heart.
And so when I proposed to Kent that I would give $130,000 in exchange for it, he said, well, 20 years at $1,300 a month is $300,000. That's way too high of a return on your investment. And I said, okay, we don't have to do this deal. I didn't really know what was reasonable. I thought I was compromising because if I were to have bought a rental property, it wouldn't be 20 years. It would be life. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of your life, your child inherits it. They get the rent check. So
yeah.
I was willing to stop at just the 20 years so that they didn't feel, I didn't want to steal from God.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the idea, well, honey, actually, I've already given $90,000 this year. If we add that with the 130 that I'm promising, that would be 220. That would be a reasonable return on investment. He said, okay, you're right. I agree. So we signed the documents. And just to be safe, I didn't stop at 130. I did 133.
Hmm.
And then when he started gaslighting me and abusing the shit out of me, emotionally and spiritually, and started saying, we don't have a contract.
Hmm.
I went, what? We have two contracts. Ernie signed one and you signed one. Oh, well, those contracts. Well, we didn't have authority to sign those contracts. That kind of a contract would require a 51% majority of the board. And I'm like, after you have my money, you're telling me this.
No.
And then they started saying, those are all donations. And a good Christian wouldn't ask for donations back.
Hmm.
You're an Indian giver and a greedy bitch. Yes, Kent Hogan called me a greedy bitch. And I'm just like, I came here to give. I was trying to give. I was trying to please the Lord. And you're going to call me that?
Yeah.
So then I'm like going through the roof. And you'll hear in the Body Slam recording, Cindy's going through the roof.
Yeah.
Is
that what prompted him to start recording the conversations? Is that when that started?
No, it started after the drug bust.
Okay. So it started very early on then, him recording all the conversations.
Yeah.
Because he said he had, I think it was 300 recordings or something of conversations.
First it was 200, then it was 600. Yeah. It went from 200 to 600 in one night. So that tells you a lot. That tells you he's lying through his teeth. But when we went to our first marriage counseling session, he recorded it.
Hmm.
Without telling me or the marriage counselor.
Hmm.
That got me really upset. And I got home. We both got home from that marriage counseling session. And he had had Steve go into our house and change the lock on the spare room. So I couldn't sleep in there. I had to sleep in Kent's bed. And I kicked the door in. I was really upset. I mean, just all this behind your back stuff. And it just was slowly a reveal as to who this man was.
Mm-hmm.
And then I forget your question.
Oh, I was just saying, is that when the recording started?
Oh,
did you say it
right.
Started earlier. And then it started, you mentioned in the Body Slam recording, which is what was played in court, that was you, you know, flying off that, like you were in anger mode, like just very upset.
That was basically the climax.
Right.
That was where I realized my husband is not my husband.
Mm-hmm.
The man that I thought I married is not, this is just my world is going away. My world is crumbling all around me. Kent Hovind is fucking evil.
Mm-hmm.
No desire to reconcile whatsoever.
I have every desire to reconcile.
You do not.
I also have a ministry to protect.
That is a lie from the pit of hell.
I don't have a ministry to protect.
Not from me. I'm your number one fan. I'm your number one heart. I have the same heart for this ministry. Turn off the damn recorder.
I'm sorry, I won't do that.
I obviously, you don't care.
Well, let's get
you
it.
You have no heart.
No, I care very much.
You have no heart.
Let's get another witness in here then.
You have no heart. You have no love. You have no Holy Spirit.
I don't understand why you let the bitterness rule in your heart.
Because you are ugly!
What have I done ugly to you?
Why are you recording?
Because this says I have to protect myself.
That's a lie! That is a lie! Get out!
This is my house!
Anyway, the recording started after the drug bust, because remember I told you I left that meeting crying really loud and running away? So that was their opportunity.
Yeah.
This is what we'll use against her. He had to discredit my witness.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew he was covering for a drug pusher. My witness had to be discredited. So that was the plan. And they implemented that plan for a year. She's bipolar. She's emotionally unstable. She's crazy. She just goes off on these. She's really nice sometimes. And then every couple of weeks, there seems to be a cycle. And she just has these episodes, brother.
Yeah.
I mean, he's slick.
Were you aware of him recording for a long time? Or was it something that you discovered? Like, how far along into this plan did you realize, like, oh, he's recording this? I didn't even realize he's doing that.
The recording that at the marriage counseling was completely, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But during that marriage counseling session, I did notice he was behaving very strangely, and he was behaving far worse than I'd ever seen him behave before. Because like I said, he knows how to behave, where he's pretending like he's listening, that he's trying to reconcile, that he's trying to come to a meeting of the minds.
See how nice you are once it's recording.
Yeah, well, I'm nice all the time, Jeff. Anyway.
You weren't a second ago.
Yeah, I was. I said, well, okay. Anyway.
But that meeting, he was intentionally trying to drive me off the edge.
Hmm.
And I did end that meeting curled up crying in a ball on the counselor's couch. And so... And when he told us that he had recorded, I got really angry. So he knew that it made me mad, that it made me feel betrayed, that it made me realize he wasn't trying to reconcile. And so anytime he wanted to tick me off, he could just walk in the room like the body slam day and say, I'll be happy to talk to you, but I have to record this for my protection. Because basically the unspoken part of that is, because you're such a raging lunatic, you know, my lawyer told me to protect myself, against, which is just an insult from the get-go, because anyway.
Yeah.
I hope that answered your question.
No, it does. So the day that particular recording happened, and because that was played in court, Ken, obviously, I mean, he talked about on his channel and said that Judge had hearing aids in and, you know, threw in a couple of different things to kind of discredit that. So
that is so ludicrous. Why would the guy be a judge if he can't hear?
Yeah,
I heard that too. I heard that too. It's like the judge shouldn't have ears.
And the judge has hearing aids. He said even Jesus was crucified over false accusations. Cindy went straight to the atheist channels. He had a couple.
I didn't go to them. They came to me. All I cared about, I didn't even look to see what they published. Later on, I started looking at what they published, and I'm like, oh, dear. I guess I should be on those channels. But I just wanted to get the word out.
Yeah.
This man needs to be exposed.
People get accused and even convicted and crucified that are innocent from time to time, don't they? You know, like Jesus and all the disciples arrested. Okay. So, famed Christian creationist Kent Hovind arrested for domestic assault. Kent Hovind arrested for abuse allegations. Kent Hovind threatens ex-wife Cindy Lincoln with body slam if she doesn't drop lawsuit. Wow. From Mothro, who comments all the time on our channel. Let's see. Body slam audio. Let's see. Kent Hovind's assault and battery charge. Kent Hovind and the body slam. What's going on? Well, the fact that Cindy, my ex-wife, went straight to the atheist channel with her story ought to say something to somebody. So sure enough, yesterday, the Conecuh County Court over here ruled Hovind's guilty and has to pay $100 for be out on bail. And we're putting it on appeal, so none of this will actually happen. And has to serve 30 days in jail. That's what the judge said. Now, the judge has no ears at all, literally, and has hearing aids and all that stuff. And when they played the audio I'm going to play for you, he apparently didn't hear the same thing everybody else heard. I'm going to let you be the judge, let you decide, okay? We're going to appeal all this. So Cindy wants to have a trial by media. She's posting stuff all over the internet on her little channel with a couple of viewers. I'm going to very reluctantly share my side of the story, and then we'll get into Matthew 24, if you don't mind. Many people in the Bible were falsely accused like this, and I was falsely accused, okay? She needs anger management, anger problem. I like that one. Okay.
I had three witnesses in the room that had heard Kent saying various renditions to the story that were, so if you're going to tell four different versions of the story, you're freaking lying.
Yeah.
So that was one of the witnesses was somebody who said one of the versions that he doesn't say anymore. And then Mary was one of the witnesses because she saw him body slam 13-year-old boy. And then the other witness was my mother's assistant. My mother was living on campus. Okay. He brought my 80-year-old mother. We brought my 80-year-old mother to live on campus. And after he body slammed me, I went to tell, it was like 11 o'clock at night. And I knew that she would hear me leaving and she'd be worried. Why are you leaving at 11 o'clock at night? Mm-hmm. So I tell her that I'm going to the doctor. I actually don't remember what I told her, because if I would have told her I was going to the doctor, she would have worried also. I don't know what I told her. I remember I told her and her assistant. Oh, I know what it was. So they saw that I couldn't breathe. They saw that I was holding my chest. They saw that I was moving really slowly. I couldn't sit down very quickly. I couldn't pick up my purse very well. And they asked me what happened. And I told them, and I said, don't tell. Nobody needs to know this. Mm-hmm. At that point, Kent Hovind was still a public figure. I didn't want to destroy his ministry. And so she testified that she saw my physical condition, and that, so Kent's story is that I made this up. I harmed myself so that I could get money from him or discredit him. And so the testimony that I had told them, no, don't tell, basically proves that's a lie.
Right.
And how am I getting money out of this? I have lost thousands of dollars over this.
So, I mean, you mentioned at the time, you know, you were not wanting to destroy his ministry. You had all these thoughts in your mind as far as that goes. And if you hear Kent Hovind talk about it. You know, it's this, the statements I just read, you know, running to these channels, looking for publicity, looking to destroy his career, his ministry,
looking for
money, all these sorts of things.
For money. Okay. How about looking for him to keep the contract? Yeah, no. I gave $200K. He owes me 18 more years of payment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But I wouldn't need to body slam myself for that. I mean, if he wasn't abusing me, I'd still be in the marriage getting that. For me to leave that marriage cost me that $1,300 a month. I knew he'd cut me off if I left.
And you're not legally married, right? That's the other piece of this that gets tricky, right? Because from what I understand, again, from Alabama law, doesn't recognize common law at this point. Correct. So trying to keep track of just this. So he was legally married to Joe for, I mean, a long time, decades.
Yeah, 40 years.
And then
so he'd be a faithful husband.
Went to prison. She left largely related to that.
We are told more to that story.
Sure.
I think she was abused as well.
So they split ways. He legally marries Mary. They split, but don't actually get legally divorced.
They never filed paperwork. In 2017, when they got married, common law marriage was recognized by Alabama. And so the common law marriage was a legal marriage, but it was not filed in the county. Therefore, if you try and go and file a divorce, they can't find the marriage.
Interesting. Okay. So he's not legally still married to her then.
Robert Beatty says he is. I have no clue.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the reason I didn't want a legal marriage is because I had a house in Cali. Kent's got a $500 million tax lien. I don't want the IRS saying, oh, you're Mrs. Hovind, joint account.
Gotcha.
Your Cali house to pay for his tax lien.
Right.
I said, no.
Okay.
Told me at the time, wow, that's a wise decision, Cindy. And of course, my father said, don't ever commingle it.
Mm-hmm.
That marriages don't always work out. And he said, don't ever commingle it. And thank God that I didn't.
And his current is also the same. It's not illegal.
I don't know what they did. Sandra's claiming they're legally married and that she legally changed her name. I have no idea.
Right.
But okay. When he gave me the piece of paper annulling our marriage, it was a fraud. He claimed that I was emotionally unstable and that if he would have known that, he would have never married me. The abject lie. And second of all, you can't annul a marriage that's almost 3 years old.
Right.
You can only annul a marriage if it's less than a year or less than 9 months or whatever.
Right.
So he's a bigamist. Yeah. But I'm thankful for Sandra because it kept me from going back. I mean, I couldn't go back as long as he never repented, but I would have stayed single for the rest of my life and kept hoping that he might repent.
So
narcissists don't.
So where do we go from here? So there's there's many layers to this, obviously. And again, many, you've interviewed many that have talked to different points of this and different sides, the financial side. You know, we haven't even covered the Chris Jones story, which is something that's been brought up quite a bit. You know, so there's all these different elements here. As far as what you'd like to see happen, he was sentenced for the domestic abuse side to a year, but it looks like he'll have to serve 30 days, unless that's changed. Which doesn't make sense to me. What would you like to see happen beyond that? Is it just awareness? Is it something where, you know, what's the best possible outcome from sharing your story and from getting more who have seen things to come out in the open and speak about it? And I know there's probably no right answer to what you'd hope would happen.
Well, there's five or different facets, five mm-hmm. or so facets. I mean, but I think before I answer that, I want to, the Chris Jones part needs to be said. Mm-hmm. I already said he covers for a drug pusher and that drug pusher was caught red-handed manufacturing porn. And Kent had him basically move onto the campus after that. Hmm. Stayed his right-hand man after he discovered porn production and heroin in his house. Okay? Kent is actively covering for this drug guy and for this porn production done on ministry equipment. He also covers for Chris Jones, who is a registered sex offender, and Brady Byram, who is not registered, but who has a scathing indictment from his son. Mm. He appointed Brady Byram to the board. Brady Byram, remember, wrote KentHovindIsInnocent.com. Mm. Okay, he just put Brady Byram on the board of Creation Science Evangelism February of 2022, just a couple months ago, knowing that his son accused him of years of child abuse to his sisters. Okay, now the Chris Jones thing. The other connection with what you do, okay, you have a lot of stuff about Hiles Anderson College.
Yeah.
Kent openly says on his channel that he used to drive one of those buses for First Baptist Church in Hammond, Indiana. Hmm. And I read an article on my YouTube channel called Let Us Pray, P-R-E-Y, and it shows a map of the United States with Hiles Anderson in the middle and tentacles going all over the country. There's been, I think, 9 convictions for pedophiles that came from Hiles Anderson. And
far more. Yeah. There's a ton. Yeah. But, and connections, first, second, third degree connections all over the place. Yeah.
And when I left Kent Hovind, this is a very long story. Anyway, Kent Hovind is still tied to Hiles Anderson College. Hmm. So I've never seen evidence that Kent is a pedophile, but he definitely covers for them. When Chris Jones brought a minor to Dinosaur Adventureland, there were many people who came to Kent and said, have you seen Chris's rap sheet?
Yeah.
See Kent's story for Jack Hiles, Brady Byram, Chris mm-hmm. Jones, and anybody else, that they're innocent, they're falsely accused.
Right.
And at the time, I believed him. But somebody came to Kent and said, have you seen his rap sheet? Mm-hmm. It's not innocent. At any rate, Kent kept maintaining, you guys are just a bunch, you know, of judgmental Christians, and you need to forgive Chris. You need to hug him right now. And Chris, brother, you're welcome on campus anytime.
And he's registered. He's a registered,
flipping registered
sex offender. Yeah.
And we just now found out that that young boy was molested by Chris Jones that weekend. Kent Hovind provided the housing. Kent Hovind's secretary tried to put them in the man cave where they would be not alone, not unsupervised. Kent said, no, 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 they're going to stay over at the house down the road. Alone. A pedophile and an 11-year-old. And now we just found out that Kent Hovind was aware that that poor 11-year-old was given cough syrup, basically knocked out with codeine, and he was acting a little bit out of it the next day. So he could be an accomplice. I have no idea what that man's actual involvement is. All I know is he covers for them. And it's a criminal organization. Well, I don't want people donating to Kent Hovind. I want him starved out. He needs to step down. He's not a pastor.
No.
Not represent Jesus. I want the people that think that he's so great and, oh, I want to go to Dinosaur Adventureland. I want to save them the trauma. Some people go to DAL and they have a great time. It's a beautiful campus. The Science Center, I built most of it. That is my heart. The greenhouse, I built. You might go there and have a good time. But if you're going to sell everything and go to live there, you will be financially and spiritually and emotionally abused. And I don't want that. I really want someone to help me. I mean, it sounds like I had a Cali home. I had lots of money, and I did, but not anymore. I cannot afford a lawyer. Lawyer who will take the case about my breached contract, and he wants $10,000. That's basically all I have. And I have a GoFundMe campaign if you want to help get Kent Hovind held accountable for what he did. If not, then I guess it'll have to wait till Judgment Day. I hope that's clear enough. It just breaks my heart when I go on his channel and I see these comments. You know, we love you, Dr. Hovind. Satan's attacking you. I'm not Satan. I wouldn't be attacking my own husband unless I had legitimate grounds.
Well, that's kind of the thing that comes up a lot, you know, and I saw this in some of the videos I was watching of his. People tend to go straight to you're under attack. And I think a lot of times people like Kent Hovind or Jack Hiles or fill in the blank with any list of persons been covered, they get ahead of these stories in a way where, you know, again, it lionizes them a little bit. You know, it's like, I am under attack, so I must be doing something right. Where, you know, all these people hate me, so obviously I'm in the right direction.
I'm a bullseye because I'm such a stalwart for the faith.
So,
yes, sir, you got it.
So how do you think, and I ask this because I haven't figured this out yet. So I'm always curious. And this is somebody I'd be interested to hear your perspective on is, you know, a lot of times when you go after somebody and their followers are told to expect persecution or expect outside attacks, it's already coded in their mind that, like, okay, someone's coming out and saying something, it's obviously a demonic attack. Oh, someone's coming out and saying something, it's obviously because he's doing the right thing. How can we better share these messages in a way that people see the truth without instantly relying on, because I mean, honestly, like in some ways, these stories are the best thing to happen to Kent Hovind because it proves that he's right. Right. It's like, man, people are coming after me because I'm doing good work. It's more ammunition for him like, how do you think we can best report on these stories in a way that doesn't, you know, it rally the troops around him? Because that's what I saw in his YouTube videos, just this group of people surrounding him in the comments and the live chat, you know, going, we love you. We love you. This is great. He had people calling him on speakerphone on the show. You know, I'm at a loss.
Others are liars.
Yeah.
All of this thing that's going on between you and her, I said it from the beginning, I don't want to get involved because I personally know that you guys are one before God's eyes. Mm-hmm. And so I don't take sides. But this nonsense right now that the judge sided with her with the recording, she knows very well that it's a lie. She knows very well. And it's a shame that she's actually doing this to you because it isn't true.
Hmm. And we're just jealous because we wanted to take over the ministry. And since we couldn't submit to our husband and take over the joint, well, we're going to attack to kill.
No.
I mean, he, like you said, he brags, there's 2,200 anti-Canhoven websites. Ha ha ha. That means I'm so great.
No.
I wish I knew the answer to that. Actually, honey, the best answer is the legal system has to go after him.
Yeah.
But you know what? Somebody told me, Cindy, he's already been in jail for 9 years.
No.
It didn't change him and it didn't change his followers.
Yeah.
But in actuality, it did change some followers.
Yeah.
And I have gotten people who have said, oh man, Cindy, I was almost going to go down there. Thank you for sharing this.
Yeah.
So I guess we just have to be happy that we will be able to save some and not others.
Yeah.
And if somebody is not willing to do the research, some people have actually done the research. They've watched some of my videos. But these are people who live there. Okay. You'll do a lot to save your job.
Yeah.
Job is also your home. When your job is also your ministry. When your job is also your fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
I've had more than one person who lives at Dinosaur Adventureland backstab me, and they know that what they're saying is not true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Sandra's one of them. Okay, when I first found out that she was allowing Steve, the guy who had the porn production studio,
mm-hmm.
and the heroin, Sandra was allowing her daughter to be babysat by him. Dang straight, I looked her up and I sent her the evidence. Yeah. I said, do not your child be babysat by Steve. Do not sell your Florida home. And do not put it in Kent's name.
No.
She basically... Well, you know, as you've said, Kent's got a web of lies.
Mm-hmm.
She chose to believe his lies. And she chose to believe that I'm lying to her. And she chose to allow her daughter to continue being with Steve. And actually, I've heard recently that Steve is finally kicked off campus. But anyway.
Yeah.
The crowning thing, I was going to say crowning jewel, but it's not a jewel. It's horrific. When he found out that Zaire was abused just last week, I also wanted Sandra to know that. And Kent's response was to say, this is on Brett Keene's show. He left a voicemail for Brett Keene. Brett Keene recorded it and uploaded it to his show. It's now on my show because Brett pulled it down. Kent's response to finding out that Zaire was molested was not, oh my God, I made a mistake. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Oh my God, I will help Chris. I will help this child any way I can. No, his response was, I just heard that Zaire's going to press charges against Chris Jones. Wow, brother, this drama's, they'll never let this drama end. They're a bunch of morons. Just ignore them. That pissed me off.
Yeah.
This little, he was 11, now he's 14. Is going to be called a moron? And so at this point, I don't have any idea why anybody is still living at Dinosaur Adventureland, because I sent that recording to That shows character. And if you're still living there and you're still sleeping with him every night, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
That's beyond cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
As far as I can see, tell me, what do you think?
Yeah.
Cognitive dissonance go that far? I don't think so.
Yeah. I always go, I mean, I even two and a half years now into doing this and talking to so many people, I always try to assume the best in people. And I always try to assume there's something I don't understand, or that there's something that, you know, and I do. I mean, I've researched and interviewed authors and talked to people who study this, and I understand that victims often become accomplices, and often, you know, often are manipulated, you know, like they're a victim of the situation. So they're getting manipulated, they're getting emotionally manipulated. There's leverage there, you know. But then also too, I mean, when it comes to the ministry cover-ups and ministry abuses, like, I mean, we had a cover-up that was happening that our church was a part of when I was a teenager. You know, I was literally in high school, and I understood the minute I saw it, even though I had been indoctrinated and grown up in that world forever, I understood that this doesn't match what we're preaching. And so I really struggle to accept that adults, that people, you know, when people say, oh, they're brainwashed or they're this, like, I was as brainwashed as you could be. I was part of that world to the fullest extent possible, you know, and to, there's just a point that where right is right, you know, wrong is wrong. And I don't know how, it's hard for me to be forgiving of that, you know, when there's so much clear.
Having the same problem.
No. But like I said, I mean, I try to see the best and try to be empathetic and see, you know, and there's people that I love that have been in these situations where they stick around a place and they've been abused blatantly and manipulated, and for some reason they stay, and I don't understand it, but it's hard. It's hard to understand and rationalize it, you know, because if I could rationalize that, I'd still be in it. You know, I can't rationalize it. I've never been able to. I don't understand how people do.
So you have the same wrestling.
Yeah.
When I was looking into the Duggar story and the recent conviction in May, and how the wife wrote him letters, let him come home to our family.
Yeah.
I thought you had a lot of, I really liked the way you said they don't deserve, she doesn't deserve custody of her children.
Yeah.
That's pretty dang serious to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she should have custody of her children if he's in jail.
Yeah.
If he comes home, why would they allow him to come home when there's children at home?
Yeah. Well, that's the point where, regardless of the why, because that's the thing at the end of the day, and not to go on a total tangent, but this is something I think about, obviously, and you think about it as well, I'm sure. But it's one of the things where, with a lot of these cases, the why is always going to confound us. Like, why did Anna Duggar, you know, stand by him for all this time? Why did Josh Duggar do the things he did? Why in these cases, why stand by Chris Jones? Why stand by these people? Why did Jack Kyles do this? Why did so-and-so fill down the list of people? We're never going to understand the why, but there's the what. Like, this happened. What's the appropriate response? Like, Anna Duggar is in many ways a victim herself. She didn't ask to be put in this situation. I feel a lot of sympathy for Anna Duggar, but also her, regardless of why she feels the way she does, if it's putting a dangerous situation for her kids, we have to address the what, you know, like if she has whatever the reason is, she feels like she owes Josh a second chance or she's going to stand by him. That doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It's she does. So how do we react? How does the legal system react to that? How do we address that? You know,
in other words, it doesn't matter why it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly.
We need to address it as what it is. It's wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
It's misplaced Christian sympathy.
Yeah.
The whole thing about Christian love and Christian forgiveness. Well, your Christian love belongs with the children.
Yeah.
Not the perpetrator.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you sharing, and I know you've shared quite a bit elsewhere, and I appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation and sharing. And obviously everything you mentioned, I'll link out to the GoFundMe in the show notes. I'll link out to your channel where people can see more, because there's so much more. I mean, we could go down all these rabbit holes and all these conversations and years of these discussions, but I really appreciate you sharing it and for being open about it. And I know we're waiting for the legal system to sort itself out on some of these things and to sentencing to complete, the appeals process to be done with. But I really do appreciate you sharing this and for all the work that you're doing, because I know it would be, in some ways it would be easier, you know, to put this behind you and just, you know, just separate it and cut the losses and go out. But I really do appreciate you taking the time to share it and to have this conversation. It means a lot to me, and I think it's important. You know, I think we're both here because I think it's important to have these discussions and get this stuff out in the open. So I really do appreciate it.
I'm glad you see it that way. Thank you. I really appreciate you just helping me get the word out and helping save future victims.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Additional information can always be found on PreacherBoysDoc.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.